Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Candace Ashby, 39 years of combination experience, a battalion chief on B shift with the Indianapolis Fire Department, doctorate of management and organizational leadership. I wanted Candace to come on and share her story of how and why she got into the fire service, but also wanted her to preach on organizational leadership challenges and issues within departments across the nation, and she did not disappoint. Often, problems aren't solely the fault of one individual, but rather indicators of flaws in the organization's system or processes. A blame culture focuses on who to blame rather than what went wrong and how to fix it. When employees fear repercussions for admitting mistakes or taking risks, they may be less likely to collaborate, share ideas, and take ownership of their actions. Instead of focusing on assigning blame, organizations should prioritize learning from mistakes and identifying ways to improve. I would like to encourage all crews to listen to this interview, together if possible. Absorb the information being said, process it, then ask yourself if you fit into this category. With that, I present Candace Ashby.
Good. Okay, I'm Dr. Candace Ashby. I've been in the fire service for a total of 39 years. I'm in my 35th year career. I work for a large metropolitan fire department in the state of Indiana. And before I begin, I want to say that all of my opinions are mine and not reflection of any of that of my employer. So I want to put that disclaimer out there. I started out as volunteer, and then I went, when I turned 21, I went career. And I started out on a smaller south side department on the south side of Indianapolis. And did that for the first half of my career, and then we consolidated into the larger department in the center of Indiana in 2009. So I got to experience what it's like to be a volunteer, what it's like to be a part-time, paid-on-call, and career volunteer on a smaller scale, and then obviously on a much larger scale. So it's been pretty cool, the ride throughout the fire service that I've taken, to see it from all kinds of different angles and cultures. There's cultures within cultures, so that intrigues me. I do have a doctoral degree in management of organizational leadership, which I completed several years ago. And now, due to that degree, I'm fascinated in watching firefighters and how they behave, and company officers, and diving into organizational problem solving and officer development and leadership development, and going from there and trying to do my part in leaving the fire service better than I found it. But in order to do that, I've got to go out and peel back the Band-Aid, rip the Band-Aid off, and expose where the issues are and get people to listen to the fundamental issues so that we can go out and solve them together. Now, that aside, how I got started was kind of interesting in the fire service, because I was 16 years old and with a group of friends at a homecoming football game, and we were smoking a joint in a vehicle, and the police pulled up and surrounded the car, and we were scared to death because we were just kids, and they had us out of the car and our hands on the hood, and I looked up at one friend and she looked at me, and we took off running for our lives. Of course, you're 16. You don't know that the cops have everything that they need when they have the car, right?
Right.
And we were being chased. I actually got caught and tackled during this this foot chase, if you will. And I was thrown into a tank. Back then, in the 80s, they had just came out with a tank where you had to sit 3 days at the county jail. So I was put in this tank. And it was just a concrete room with a toilet. Did 3 days there. And when I came out of that and went in front of a judge, he drew a picture on a piece of paper. He drew a line down on the center of the paper. And he said, "This is you on that line. And if you fall over to the right, you're going to be okay. If you go over to the left, you better bring your toothbrush, because you're not going to go home. this is where you're gonna, live a life of trouble and things like that. And that really resonated with me. It kind of scared was actually scared me to death. I was like, well, I don't want to be on that fence. I want to jump over here and never get in trouble again. But he gave me community service. So when I was young, I wanted to go into law enforcement. And until I got tackled by the police, and then I didn't like him right then, and obviously being in a jail. And when I did the community service, I went to the local fire department to wash the police cars. And then I saw how much fun the firefighters were having, and they were just having a blast all day long. And like I said, I was 16 years old. I got my community service done, and I was able to join as a cadet at that point in the fire service, and the rest of it is history from that point forward of falling in love with it. And then I met my husband at the small department, and we ended up getting married, and he was a volunteer and a full-time mechanic, and I went on to do career, and I just like, there wasn't anything greater than the fire service. So that's how I got started. It was kind of unique. It came out of being arrested and having community service.
I mean, you definitely don't hear that every day.
No.
Okay. So with that being said, once you got into the volunteer side, did you have anybody show you the ropes on what a firefighter is, what being a firefighter truly is?
I did. On the volunteer side, there was a group of us that were very, very close. We became like family. We were at each other's houses every weekend. We did everything together, whether, back then a big thing was getting the big monster wheels on the 4x4 trucks and going mudding and going spelunking and stuff. We had so much fun together. But when we were at the firehouse, we trained together and we did things together. Now, we didn't make, it was a small volunteer department. We didn't make a ton of fires, but the fires that we did make, there were some great firefighters on that volunteer department that would grab you around the neck and say, "Get in here, kid," or they would put their foot right square on your butt and kick you inside that door if you hesitated to go in because of the heat, and saying, "No, this is not how you get in. Get in there and get it done." And I always thought that was a cool aspect. And then I went farther and got on the career department. I had some really good aggressive firefighters that I was able to watch. And just like in awe of them and wanted to be just like them. I don't know that if I ever succeeded. I hope I want to say that I did, because that's how you earn the respect of your peers, is on the fire ground, and getting the job done and doing the work and things like that. But yeah, it's the volunteers. There was some really, really good people that did this as a volunteer side, but they certainly could have been career firefighters if they had chose that path.
Now, when the opportunity presented itself to go career where you could see yourself getting paid to do the job you're doing now, what was that like for you?
Oh, it was like a dream come true, except back then you didn't get paid very much. You had to be 21 in the state of Indiana in order to go career. And you had to be between those, the age gap of 21 to 35 at the time. And I was jonesing at 18 years old. I was wanting to be career, then 19, then 20. I actually went through the entire process at 20 years old. And I turned 21 on the day of my second interview, and our recruit class started in the very next month. So another interesting piece is, and I tell this in the classes that I do, is I came from a family that's a lot older. So my dad, when he had me, he was in his 50s. And my brothers and sisters were a lot older than I was. I was raised in a very strict union household. My dad, he belonged to UAW because he worked at Chrysler on the factory floor. My brothers were Teamsters. And I knew about and was exposed to brotherhood before I ever got into the fire service, just as a little girl. And they just absolutely, it was just a humbling experience to watch these guys. If you mess with one Teamster, you mess with them all. And they took me to picket lines when I was a little girl, when they would strike and show, whatever you do, you don't cross a picket line and things like that, that they stand in solidarity. When I went career back then, we were 100% union. And I jumped in. I wanted to be the first one in line because I was raised that way. And I still am union today. Don't get me wrong. I make the money I make and have the benefits I have today because we have a very strong union where I work. But what I don't necessarily like and what I call out is the union paying members that don't understand what a union is, and they don't understand how to take care of each other. That just absolutely breaks my heart. Well, when I got career, there was a couple of guys that didn't like me. And they didn't like it because I stayed on that volunteer department and the fact that I was a female. And females were just now really kind of infiltrating the fire service. But a couple of these guys were really out against me. And that was my first indoctrination to being part of a union, but yet having other union brothers that didn't like you for whatever reason. And they wanted to start stuff. They wanted to make up lies. And I just could not understand how anybody could be like that because I was like, this is not what a union's about. It's supposed to be like a family, you know, just like the fire service, whether you're union or non-union, we should have each other's backs just because we're firemen. Same way with union. I talk very strong today, and haters are going to hate. And occasionally there may be a union person that thinks I'm anti-union, and they're completely wrong. I'm not. And they'll say, well, you're a scab. Well, no, I'm not. I pay my union dues, and I always will pay the union dues, and scabs do get benefits from not paying union dues from the ones that do, right? But I say, what's even worse than a scab is when one union member turns against another one. And that's the stuff that just breaks my heart because it's like, why does it have to be that way? Why can't we all focus on wanting the same things instead of making it individualistic and personal agendas and things like that? And that's where, unfortunately, that I've seen some people in the union want to use that to push their personal agendas. And that's where the politics comes into it. And it's incredibly sad because it can tear apart any organization, whether it's union or non-union, it can just tear that apart. And that's where we've got to do better, no matter what.
So you mentioned earlier, your department was absorbed into a larger department.
Yes.
Did you have to go through some sort of training again, or did they pretty much like grandfather the individuals that were already on to the
No, he
new
was a
department?
grandfather, but we went through meetings. We had to adopt their SOGs, basically, that all of ours stopped, and we had to go into the bigger department and learn their ways. And so we adopted that, but it wasn't necessarily going back through recruit class or anything. We all retained our seniority as we were, brought in. Yeah.
And I'm assuming we're talking about Indy.
Any?
Indianapolis.
Yes.
Okay. So with that being said, for those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about the size, how many stations, roughly personnel, things like that?
Yeah, Indianapolis is around 1,300 firefighters, 44 stations. Is how big we make roughly 160,000 runs a year. And I'm a battalion chief on the northwest side of Indy. And I have seven stations, 60 firefighters under my command.
And roughly engines, ladders, how many?
I'm going to say right off the top of my head, well, there's 44 stations. So I know we have 44 engines and probably somewhere around 23, 24 ladders.
All
If I
right.
had to, without looking at the actual number,
Right.
yeah.
Right. Okay. Any heavy rescues?
We have squads that are manned by two firefighters, and there's four strategically placed squads throughout the city. We do have two specialty stations that are heavy tack houses that do have what you would consider a heavy rescue. But it's on call only versus being individually staffed. So the ladder crew jumps over and takes the tack on a special response, like a rope rescue or a dive run or an extrication.
And
And I
you're
believe
mid.
that the plan, the overall strategic plan, is to move in that direction in the future that we could have potentially dedicated rescues.
No ambulances, or do you?
No.
No. Okay. All right. So you're all BLS, I guess, BLS firefighters.
No, we are ALS also. We have both paramedics and EMTs.
Okay.
But we don't do transport. That's a separate agency that does transport throughout Indianapolis. But yeah, we have ALS designated engines and ladders.
Okay. And your minimum staffing across each apparatus.
We have full staffing in Indianapolis, so we're extremely lucky, which most apparatus have five people assigned to it, but four work at a time. So if all five are there, the fifth guy gets bounced out. So we have full staffing at four across the board. To man each shift, the minimum staffing each day is 294 firefighters.
Okay. And as battalion chief, do you have an aide or is it just you in the car?
I do have a aide. I have an executive officer.
Okay. All right.
And
All
it's a
right.
captain. And when in my absence, the captain slides over into my spot, and then somebody steps up and drives her.
Okay. So upon the complete absorption of the fire department now becoming Indianapolis Fire Department, what was your first assignment?
I was the driver of a battalion chief. So I was the executive officer and when we merged in. And I drove a battalion for the first 5 years.
Okay, what was that like?
That was an incredible learning experience. One, I never hide the fact that I was scared to death to consolidate into Indy. I was just on this small department that was judgmental. Our culture wasn't the greatest. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to walk into these busy firehouses and get pounded back to the south side. I didn't really know what to expect. And it was a big brother. It was a big brother to us. And I really wasn't sure. So I came in driving a battalion, which was really cool because I got to learn so much as we went forward. Now I'm getting to run and see the different cultures and how they blend in with each other. When I went through the captain's process, I was promoted to captain and I went and roved the city and worked overtime. And that was my first learning, walking into a firehouse, some of these busy houses, and putting my stuff down and saying, "Hey guys, here I'm Captain Ashby." And the guys would say, "Hey Cap, you take care of us, we take care of you. That's how we roll in this firehouse." And I was like, "Could you repeat that again? I've never heard that before in my career." And then they would repeat it again. And I was able, post consolidation, to close the chapter on the first half of my career and reopen it under Indianapolis. And I was off to the races. I fell in love again with the fire service. I got to be around firefighters that didn't worry about what the administration was doing. They didn't let it eat them from the inside out. They actually came into the firehouse every day and had a blast and took care of each other. The first department I worked at, I came from a department that taught me that if you were the last engine on the scene, you park in such a way that you don't get blocked in by the hose, so you can be the first one to leave. And I work in a department now that when it comes time to pick up hose and there's 50 people standing on that scene, all 50 people stand behind that engine and put their hands on the hose and they pick it up. Not because they have to, because they want to, because they all want to take care of each other. And it wasn't always like that for me in the fire service where I was at before, because we didn't have that culture to take care of each other. It was more the fighting and the scratching, the toxicity, the low morale, the lack of leadership. And when I got into Indianapolis and I saw that there was a whole different realm of the fire service, I couldn't believe it. It was off to the races. And I was able to shed the other department, go into the city and see the different cultures and things, and really get a good on the street experience learning of what it's like. And that's part of the reason why I do what I do today when I go out and teach, is I go out and say, "Man, this is truly the greatest job in the world." And it can be that way so long as you want it. But I never realized how strong the attitudes and the mindset was. And I had to be one to put my mindset and attitude in check as well. And once I did that, I was off to the races, and I absolutely love it. And I tell people today, yeah, I'm in my 35th year, and people ask, it's not uncommon for people to see and say, "Hey, how much longer are you going to go? When are you going to sign the drop? When are you retiring?" I'm like, "Are you kidding me? 35 years is just a warm up. I want another 35 years in the fire service because I love it more today than I've ever loved it." And it just continues to grow like that every single day I walk into the firehouse. Because I'm just surrounded by so many good people. And the guys that I have in my battalion make it my job so entirely simple that I learned more from them than I could ever teach them. And they're very aggressive. They're very good. They have a lot of pride in what they do. And it's just like, wow, this is really, really cool. And why would I want to ever even think about doing something else or leaving that aspect of it? So I'm just enjoying it while it lasts.
Okay. If I can ask, what triggered you to promote to captain?
Well, when I was at the smaller department, I went through a process and I was promoted to lieutenant. And then our tested positions were lieutenant and captain, and a battalion chief's rank was appointed. Now, I jumped from a merit lieutenant's rank to an appointed battalion chief's rank, and I skipped the rank of captain, as you know, is not a popular thing to do in this business. But it was what it was that I went through at the time, and I took that position. And I tried to be the best battalion that I could be. That department, I was passed over a couple of times for the rank of captain because the administration at the time believed that if they promoted me to captain, they had to send me back out to the street and they weren't going to lose me as a battalion chief. When we were lining with the merger of Indianapolis, I ended up getting demoted out of that appointed battalion chief's position and sent back to a lieutenant, but I was next on the list for captain. So I was promoted to captain and I went to a ladder. As we were merging in with Indianapolis, they created that new position, that the executive officer, the driver of the battalion, and I wanted that position. And the battalion, the fire chief at the time said I wasn't qualified because I was a captain and that was a lieutenant's rank. So I said, well, I can fix that. And I took my captain's badge off and I threw it across his desk. And I demoted myself from merit rank of captain back to merit rank of lieutenant so that I could come into Indianapolis driving a battalion chief. So I went through that demotion. And when I got into Indianapolis, a short time after, there was a rumor mill that was going on that the executive officers were going to have to be captains. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. So I was like, I can't win for losing. But I went ahead and went through the process and I ended up getting promoted to captain prior to that position changing rank. So it sent me out floating in the city, and I had a tough decision to make. Stay, risk it, stay a lieutenant when they change it, I'm going to lose my position, or go ahead and take the captain's rank and go out in the city and float. And I did that. And I went to an engine company for a while, and then I went through the battalion chief's process, and then ultimately getting promoted to battalion chief. And that's how I wound up going up and down the chain of command through my career.
Right.
But where I'm at today
Right.
was really because of happenstance that, I demoted to take a position, but then I had to go through a promotion to retain that, but it wasn't done yet, so it kicked me out of the spot and sent me roving in the city, which, by
Okay.
the way, is the best thing that could have ever happened.
With your education now and knowing what you know when it comes to firefighters, you mentioned earlier firefighters 10 to worry more about what admin is up to than worrying about themselves, their crews, their fire stations, their performances. So I heard that I was talking to an individual and he had said something that kind of resonated with me. And he was like, most of the time, the angry firefighter you see is angry because they're either burnt out or they're frustrated. What's your take on why firefighters, especially the ones that really love the job, why sometimes worrying about what admin is doing instead of, worrying about their own for, their own fire station?
Well, I believe a lot of it comes from because we repeat Groundhog Day. Every day that we wake up and we go into the firehouse, we tend to follow each other into the complacency part where we're at today. Now, I'm not saying everybody's complacent, but it is standard across the board. And this is my experience and my opinion that you get into a fire department and what we do out on the street is blame everything on somebody else. So the two people that we blame on the street is the administration or fire chief, one and the same, or the millennials for screwing up the fire service. But we're always looking for somebody to blame. And it's incredibly sad, but that's what we have come to learn is a natural thing for us to do is just to blame admin. And one of the things that I do, and I wish somebody would have came out when I was younger to tell me this, is, hey, Ashby, you'll never work for the perfect fire department because it doesn't exist. Nobody ever told me that. And I always waited, like, oh, we'll just wait for the next administration, for the next fire chief, and things will get better. Things always get better. And then as I got older, and I went through several administrations between all the departments that I've been on, I was like, it truly is, change out the clowns, the circus stays the same. And I think there's more firefighters that need to understand you will never work for the perfect fire department because it does not exist. Because all an organization is a group of people under the umbrella of that organizational name, and people are not perfect. That's why you'll never work for a perfect organization. Every organization in this world has some type of issues. Now, some worse than others. But the other part, the critical piece that is you'll never work for the perfect fire chief because they don't exist. Now, are there fire chiefs that are better than others? You bet your butt there is. But there's also firefighters that are better than others. There's EMTs that are better than others. There's paramedics that are better than others. You will always find somebody else that might have just a little bit more knowledge, just a little bit more skill, or just a different way of doing things that might be a little bit better than the last. But if we're sitting back and we're taught to believe that everything is the administration's fault, just wait for the next fire chief. And if you're waiting for somebody to come in on a white horse and save your organization, you're going to wait your entire career because it's never going to happen. And unfortunately, in the fire service, we are not given organizational leadership training at all. It's just not something, it's just not part of it. There's a separation to say, well, this is the fire service. This is not a business. This is not the private world. This is not a Monday through Friday. I get it, but it is a business. We're in a business of saving lives. We're in a business of going out on people's worst day and mitigating their problem in the best way that we can, whether it's a medical emergency or whether that's, we got to put out a fire, we got to save the environment. And we get this mental block that the fire chief is the one to blame for everything. And when we look at an organization, the majority of people are sitting at the bottom and they have no idea how much power that they actually hold in their hands because they're not led to believe that. They're led to believe that all the power is at the top of the organization. Then, I don't know if anybody didn't understand the day that they signed up for the fire service that we work for the government. We work, and there's politicians. And it doesn't matter whether it's political environment, if it's not political, there's good and bad in every single organization. There's people that are good, there's people that are not so good. And we do a terrible job, I think, overall in the fire service at preparing our officers for those leadership and management roles prior to them becoming officers. It is customary that for us to go, say, 5 years. Take a kid 5 years. Here you go. Take a test. We're going to give you a badge. Here's a book called the Standard Operating Procedures. Everything that's in there that you need to know, including how to discipline somebody. There's something in there called progressive discipline. Here you go. So if your guy shows up late, you just write him up. That's how you do it. And we send these kids off, and they're not trained in how to deal with people. So a lot of the issues in the fire service that we hear, micromanagement, favoritism, biasness. Well, what's the opposite of micromanagement is delegation. Where's the delegation training and how do you bring somebody up? Look at discipline. When do you coach? When do you counsel? When do you actually lay paper on somebody to change an unwanted behavior? Where is that teaching at to learn? To teach these young kids, I see really a couple of different, I guess, extremes for people that are officers. There's some that are very extreme when it comes to the standard operating procedures. That's the only thing they know. It's black and white. That is it. There's no gray. This is what it says, and it is way too much. And firemen don't do well in those environments where it's very rigid of the black and white. Then I see the other extreme where you get what's called the fireman's fire chief. Very laid back, easygoing, relatable, didn't forget where they came from. almost too laid back. And to the point that we don't go out and do training as much and stuff. And then we have the ones that are in the middle, that's there. But where is the training? The military has figured this out, but the fire service hasn't figured it out because we don't mandate. All we do is these state certifications. And I'll say it, and I'm not, I'm sorry, but the fire officer one, which is, that's a, that is the standard, I think, across the board in this country, that if you want to be a lieutenant, take fire officer one. You want to be a captain, be fire officer two. But those classes are only good as the instructor that's teaching it. And there's such a variation in that, even though we may have a standard model based on NFPA, going through one of those classes and having a certificate at the end that says you're fire officer one. I didn't know the first clue how to be a fire officer, even though I had all four. I had fire officer one, two, three, and four. And I'm like, what the hell am I doing? How do I relate to these people? So I honestly think there's a huge disconnect between the people on the street and the people in the admin. Now, that's one of my frustrating things. All 35 of my career years have been on the street. And I am frustrated because people in the admin don't listen to us on the street, and they need to start listening to us. We have a voice, we're very smart, but it's typical for people in the admin to think, well, there's not enough time in the day for me to explain to you what I have to go through and the things from my set of lenses that I see it from here. You don't know, you just sit out there and take it. And that doesn't resonate with us very well. I've said my whole career and watch people go to the administration. Some of them are phenomenal. They are. Others, not so much. And I think all organs, I think we all see it. So the same way with officers. There's some people here that should have never got hired in the fire service. There's officers that should have never got promoted, but they got promoted. So what are we going to do about it? That's where we all take the licks, where we have to suffer in that. But I've sit and watched people go to the admin, and this is what I've seen. This, again, is just my opinion. I watch people go in there and they find out they have this grandiose idea of how they're going to put a positive spin on the organization when they get there and do some type of improvement. And then they get there and they find out that there's only a handful of people running a multi-million dollar organization if it's a career department, and there's not enough time in the day. This is not a Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 job. These guys in the admin are putting in 12, 14, 16-hour days. It's not 5 days a week. It's 6, 7, 8 days a week. Us on shift, we can turn it off when we go on our days off if that's what we so choose to do. The people in the office, they can't ever turn it off. There's always a problem. There's always somebody at the phone ringing, something that has to be solved. And then this person that goes in there that wants to do this grandiose idea figures out everything's as slow as mud because it's a bureaucracy. And you have to go through all these checks and balances and hoops. And if they didn't have data-driven classes, by golly, they need it today because everything's driven off of data, right? And they get so frustrated that that leads to the disconnect of us on the street because they don't have enough time in the day and they're doing the job of 10 to 12 people. This is what I just sit back and see. I'm not in the admin. But I used to sit back and say, they forgot where they came from and it's us versus them mentality. But I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think they're so incredibly busy that the last thing on their mind is when the tones go off that we respond. The problem is when they don't pay attention to us, the relationship suffers. And when that relationship suffers, so does the trust. And when the trust starts eroding away, the toxicity goes up and the morale goes down. And then we're in this organizational chaos environment of an us versus them mentality. And we're us on the street, we're going to fight. And this is the reason that I don't want to be an admin, that I haven't been an admin so far in my life. I'm like, why would I want to go in there and bust my ass every day, day in and day out, to make that organization better for all of my brothers and sisters? For my brothers and sisters that are on the street to tell me what a piece of shit I am because I'm in the admin. Because that's exactly what we do to the people that's in the administration. Somebody has to be there. And I ask people this when I go across this country. Do you agree somebody has to be in the admin? Yep, sure do. That's right. If you're going to get a paycheck, you're going to get fire trucks and fire stations. uniforms, somebody's got to be in there. But we send people there, and it don't matter how good they are. We beat the living hell out of them. And not only do we do that, we have shift wars. Every shift thinks they're the best shift, and they have a problem with the other two shifts being lazy and not doing their part. But there are bosses on all of those shifts. Why are the bosses allowing it? You have one shift that don't fill the trucks. You got another shift that don't pick up the cups. You got another shift that wants to leave one piece of food in the pan and loosely cover it and throw it in the refrigerator so they don't have to do the pan instead of have a courtesy for the oncoming shift. So we always have these shift wars that's going back and forth, and these people aren't doing their pulling their weight and this and that. Why? Why are we doing that to ourselves? It absolutely amazes me that we can go out when the tones drop on a entrapment response. Say it's a fire with entrapment, and we are going to go risk everything that we have to save this individual. And we don't know a thing about them. We don't know if they could be a rapist, they could be a child molester, they could be a murderer, it could be the greatest person that ever walks face the earth. Who knows? We don't care about that in the moment. We're going in to save a life. But yet we come back to the firehouse and we stab our brothers and sisters in the back. So my problem and what I see is getting firefighters to understand it's not the admin. If you do not like your admin or the way that they're doing business, I hope you like them, but if you don't, what are you doing to change it? Because every single day you walk in the doors of your fire department, you're mentoring the future. The future lieutenants, the future captains, and the future chiefs. If you don't like the way that they're doing business, then change it. But you have to change the bottom because the people at the top come from the people at the bottom. And if we don't start getting a hold of ourselves at the bottom of the organization and changing it, we're just going to continue to repeat Groundhog Day every single day. Now, I want to change it. I want to do my part in preparing my people to take care of their people. So I honestly feel that my job every single day that I go into work is to take care of the 15 officers under my command. I work for them. They work for their people. Their people serve the customers on the street. So if I have a problem with a firefighter, I'm going to that officer because there's only one person that's going to make a firefighter do their job, and that's the company officer. And there's only one person that's going to make a company officer do their job, and that's the battalion chief. And there's only one person that's going to make a battalion do their job, and that's the next level. And when one of those levels fails to do their job, then the whole house of cards comes tumbling down, and we just repeat this Groundhog Day over and over and over. Think about it. How many times are we blaming somebody else for everything that's wrong for the fire service? It's somebody else's fault, it's not ours. And I'm saying it's time we turn the mirror around. We've all been there. We've all done it. And we all have got to take ownership in these organizations to make it better. But it's driven into us that the administration is the one that leads the organization. And that is not the case. It's the firefighters and the company officers. If they want a better culture, they need to make a better culture. They don't need to sit back and wait on a fire chief to do it because it's never going to happen. The fire chief doesn't dictate the culture. The people on the street do. And so I'm trying my hardest to get firefighters to listen and to change their perspective and their mindset and their attitudes and fall in love with this job again because it truly is the greatest job in the world. But we're the ones that have to make it that way. When we come into work and we take care of the guy on the right and the guy on the left and we start getting it, instead of ripping people to shreds, because that's all we're doing to each other, why we're blaming it on somebody else. And we got to get a hold of that. As a society, we got to get a hold of it in the fire service if we're ever going to make it better for ourselves. And then we're going to start getting the people in positions that actually understand how to take care of other people. We're going to get bosses that aren't narcissistic and aren't let their egos so big that it takes up the whole room, the micromanagement. We're going to get people that understand, hey, we need to take care of our other people. Because there's not a greater feeling in this world is when your boss has your back. And there's not a worse feeling when they don't. And I've been on both sides of that. And I want to do everything that I can for my people every single day. But I know I am not going to get my way all the time. I know that not everything's going to go my way, but how I react to that when it happens is going to make the difference. And I used to come into the firehouse and I would go to the stations and I would say, well, I tried to tell them and they wouldn't freaking listen to me. But what good did that ever do besides bring everybody around me down? And I figured out that I still fight the battles, I still fight the fights, but I don't go to my seven stations and bring them down into the trenches of those fights. I go around to seven stations and it's just awesome. We build relationships. We do, the things that we want to do to get to know each other, to build the trust. I want them to know that I have their back. And I want to know that when I lay my head down at night, I've done every single thing for the men and women in my battalion, and I'm satisfied with that. And if I don't get my way, guess what? I get up the next day and I fight again. But that's all we can do. We have to be able to put in perspective what is in our control and what's not in our control. And there's so many firefighters that get beat down that things have happened to that can't get rid of it. They can't let go of the past. And they're dragging that around like a baggage around their neck. It's like a chain around them. And they're dragging through their entire career. I don't care what happened to you last week, last month, last year. I don't care if you got demoted, you got written up, you got suspended. I'm sorry that that happened to you. But understand this. There ain't a thing you're gonna do about it. It's done, it's over, it's history, it's in the past. You can wish it away all you want, but it's not gonna go anywhere. And you'll never be able to embrace the future if you cannot let go of that past. And we need more firefighters to hear, let go of it. Because there's two choices you have when things happen to you that are unfair. You're either gonna be a victim mentality and say, oh, what woe's me for the rest of your career. Or you're going to pull up your big boy and big girl panties and move the hell on. And that's what we have to have more of. If you think you're going to go through life and be treated fairly your entire life, you're in for a rude awakening. But it's how we react to that when it hits us in the face is where it's going to really build. And if you see the real firefighters, and I'm saying real firefighters out here in this country that understand this job, that understand how good it is, and they're out here every day grinding day in, day out to give back to the future, to show these kids this is what the fire service is about. They're the most humble people in the business. And they would give the shirt off their back to anybody. And they're out here trying to make it better for every single person by educating them and doing these classes and stuff. It is just unbelievable to watch that. That to me is the real firefighters, not the ones sitting shooting their mouths off in the firehouse. One of the things that I do is when I go around the country and I do organizational leadership training, I ask the firefighters, I may depict a pyramid and say, here's the people at the top, here's the people at the bottom, depending on how big the organization is. And it could be an organization of 10, 50, 200, 1200. I said, there's always those unhappy people that are on the street that are going to come in and day out. I call them the organizational sabotagers because they're just miserable. They're just unhappy people. And I don't know why they're unhappy. There may have been something happened to them. They may be going through stress in their life. It may be mental. I don't know. But the majority of it, in my experience, it's nothing. I think the majority are spoiled, rotten brats. That's never been with a strong enough officer for that officer to put their foot right square up their butts and say, not today, honey. Not today. Are you going to act like that? Not on my engine, not on my ladder, not in my firehouse, not in my battalion. I'm sick and tired of it. I don't want to hear it. Be done with it. And if we had more officers that understood that they're more powerful than any fire chief in this entire country, then we can actually move the entire organizations forward. Because it's more than just about being nice. It's about putting your foot down. So one thing that I tell officers is some of your kids need to be loved and hugged because they do a tremendous job. And there's another set of your kids that need a big freaking paddle. And it's your job to deliver the blow, not the administration's. It's yours. Because you come in through that authority that the administration gives you from that organization, and you dictate how that firehouse operates. And what are you allowing to happen? And that's how that's the power. And the firemen have the power of choice because what happens and what I call the 10%ers, because I ask people, how much the percentage of just unhappy? And the number one answer I'm given is 10%. It may vary in organizations. Some may say 20, some may say 5. The thing is we have got to understand who the 10 percenters are, and the guys know who the negative people are. Can you imagine the power? And when that person starts shooting their mouth off at the kitchen table, if the other firefighters got up and walked away and walked out in the bay, take the audience away. I need the 90% that aren't the complainers and the, oh, I hate this job and things like that, to take the audience away from the 10%. And that in itself will better any organization in this country. But when we don't, it's the 90% that's spreading the cancer through the organization. They're not doing it intentionally, but they are doing it. And there's only so much of that crap you're going to sit and listen to before it eats away at you. And it eats away at your heart and your soul and your spirit and your mind. And then we turn the 90% into the 10%. But I think we've all been there and done that. And we've got to get better and say, I'm better than this, and get our butts back above the line and being the best person that we can be every single day. And just being good people. What the hell happened to that? And to be able to have conversations with each other without getting mad and defriending people and doing all this. It's like, no, we can agree to disagree. You can have your opinion, I have my opinion, and we can still be friends. It's a damnedest saying. It's like, now, no, if you disagree with me, I can't be your friend. I gotta hate you. I gotta do this. It's like, no, you can't fight hate with hate. That will never, and if you have somebody that's hateful in a position that's above you, it sucks. It really does. But what are you going to do about it? There's not a whole lot you can do besides wait that person out and use them as a catalyst of what not to become, and then teach everybody around you, don't be like that guy. Be better than that guy, because it's exactly what we tell our children when they run into bullies. We don't we it hurts us, it breaks our heart, but we don't say, well, go cry in the basement for the next 30 years and then be a bully to the next kid you see. No, we say you got to be better than that kid. But we don't tell our firefighters that. And when are we going to start? That was probably a very long-winded answer to your question, so I apologize for that, but it's going in a whole different realm versus, getting caught up in the admin. Don't worry about that. You can't do anything about it. Do what you can do something about, which is your own attitude, actions, and behaviors. And you will be off, I'm telling you. When you come in and just concentrate on you and your guys and doing stuff and having each other's backs and doing training and having a blast and the headset conversations, you'll start falling in love with this job if you've lost it, or you'll even grow that love even more in your brotherhood and your bonding. And then we're going to start producing people that need to be produced, and they'll eventually make their way to the headquarters. And then we're all going to be taken care of instead of fighting the battles.
Love it, Chief. Okay. I do have a question. How would the bottom half get their organization to see we don't have a leadership program? Like, because what you said, I believe, happens in most organizations. For example, myself, I'd like to be an officer. Okay. Take a written test, score, check. Go do a fire scenario, score, check. Does he meet the grade? Yes. Congratulations. You're promoted. Like you said, here's your book. This is what you have to do, your rules, your policies. Hands washed. This is your crew. Bye. How can we get organizations to understand this is not all we need? We need some development. Like, how do we get them to see that? And who can they go to, or what avenue can they go down to bring that in to help the organization when it comes to officer development?
Well, I believe every organization recognizes that, and that's something that they fight with, of how with what you know how to do it, what's the right way to go about it. That's the answer that every single fire department out here in the country wants to know. How can we develop our officers, our leadership? It's usually driven by money, because it costs money to bring in outside instructors and things like that. But there's so much stuff that can be done that don't cost a damn dime, and we've got to get more people to see that there are things that can be done. We got to have officers that do more than the bare minimum, that they go out and they make themselves better. If you and it's so funny, I have a video clip out there that I talk about. If the department doesn't pay you and doesn't give you overtime, then don't make it an excuse. Just go better yourself, and then it's it's created this war of haters going, oh my gosh, how could you say that? How could we work for free and take time away from our families and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars? Are you kidding me? That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying at all. Buy yourself a freaking book. Go down to the half-price bookstore and spend $5. Get yourself a leadership book or a management book. Start reading it. Understand where your weaknesses are. Do you need help with delegation? Do you need help in the discipline or motivation? Or what is it that you need help with? There's something out there. Hell, there's YouTube. Everybody goes down you could learn how to do anything with a video on YouTube. All of that stuff's free. You got FSRI out there. They're producing tons of videos, and there's organizations that's doing that. So it's free or very low cost. And once the firefighters under or the officers understand they have to better themselves and they have to have personal development because their job is to grow and develop people. And they can't grow and develop anybody unless they first grow and develop themselves. Well, you're asking from a 1,000-foot level as an organization, how do we make our officers better? Well, one, they got to want it. They got to want to be better. They got to want to have the education and training. I guarantee you there are people in every organization that are true assets that have something that they can offer that organization. The problem is when you're within your own organization, you can't be a prophet in your own land. And that's incredibly sad, but it is what it is. One of the things that I do, it is not popular, but we don't bring in outside instructors necessarily into our big department because of the size of it. And my job is to make sure all 60 of my guys go home. I see where there may be deficits or where they need to extra training. And I will bring in outside instructors to train my battalion, and I'll pay for that out of my pocket. Or I will trade trainings. Hey, you want to come to train my guys? I'll go train your guys. Or we'll do something, we'll have a barter system like that. There's so many things that can happen that if you want to think outside the box, the in personal development to make it happen, absolutely. Now, I wish I could answer your question and just say, well, A, B, C, and D is how you bring in officer development and leadership development. And I thought when I went through my doctoral degree that when I graduated, I was going to come out with two books I was going to write. One was officer development, the other one was succession planning. I thought, well, if I just do that, I'll have all the money in the world because everybody wants to know the answer to those two questions. And it wasn't until I was going through my entire dissertation process that it wasn't in the books. It's not in, because everybody as individuals are at a different level of learning. And to say you've got to go through, this standard form and we're going to bring you from here to here, that's one way of doing it. That's what happens in the collegiate world out there, the colleges, the schools, and things like that. But as an individual in true personal development, professional development, however you want to say it, everybody is got their own unique thing. And I thought it didn't come out of a book. It's got to be individually based. You got to have those learning mechanisms out there, but that's what the conferences are for. That's what books are for. I may pick up a book and read it on time management. You may want to pick up a book and read it on the organizational behavior. So we have to have that. It's no different than I used to go out and mandate that my officers train on certain criteria every month. I would dictate, I want you to do ladders, I want you to do reverse layouts, whatever. And then I got to realize, every company is different. They have their own strengths, their own weaknesses. It's like having individual kids. They need the freedom and the autonomy to understand where they recognize their own weaknesses and turn those weaknesses into strengths. Sure, we can have some standardized stuff, but it's more about the customize. So I don't know that there's a one all be all answer to your question as far as how do we get people, but I think the main thing is getting people that want to be better. They want to better themselves. They want to get into it and to make a difference, leave the fire service better than they found it. And to do that, they have to develop themselves. And I would hope to think we get better. And I think we have. I think we've come a long way in the fire service in the last 35 years from where we used to be to where we are now. But we still have a long way to go
Okay.
in order to do that. But the more officers, and I go to these conferences all over the country, and it's just cool to see all these people coming together because they want to be better and they want better for their organizations. That's what we need more of. And when there's more conferences today than I've ever seen, and they continue to grow. The podcasts continue to grow. The social media world is continuing to grow. There's so many opportunities today that I feel like we are finally winning, and we just have to keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing forward to making those incremental changes on the positive side. And there's some great organizations out there that have officer development in their own worlds and what they're doing and task books and check boxes and all this stuff. But what happens for your ongoing development? What happens when you make this officer and they hit all their criteria that they have to hit for, or like me, I have a doctoral degree. There's no higher degree that you can get than that. So now what? Now what do I do? And I've got all these training and certifications in the fire service. Well, guess what? Start repeating them again or go back through. And I'm not talking about degrees because that comes with a big price tag, but I'm talking about training. Like I took strategy and tactics in 1990. I'm a battalion chief in 2025. How good would I be if I never went and continued my education and training as a battalion chief? Because that stuff has changed in the last 35 years. And I can't just rely on experience because the fires aren't as frequent as they were once were. And we have to have that mix of training, education, and experience to be any good at this job at all. We have to know how to read the buildings, how to read the smoke, how to understand strategy and tactics. We have to constantly be on top of being a student of this game. Absolutely. Which I know is the name of your podcast, but you can't ever stop learning. I learn more today at 35 years on a job than I've ever learned in this entire business. And I'm continuing to learn. I just had my first working high-rise fire where I was the incident commander. 35 years, 39 in the fire service total, and I just commanded my first one. And I'm like, holy cow, it's a totally different game in doing high-rise versus, your other buildings and apartments and houses and things like that. And it's just like, I was grateful that I got the little bit of learning that I have had in high-rise paid off. But I also made mistakes and so much more learning that I've got to have in order to go forward. And that's the way we've always got to be. We can't just say, oh, I know it all. I've been doing this so long, But it's customary in our line of work that the higher you go and the more time you have on, the less training and education you take. And man, do we have that wrong. And we need to get better at that.
Okay. In your opinion only, this is just between me and you and whoever's listening, of course, but if the department or the organization isn't happy with the leadership, can the boots that are on the ground, can the company officers, can the go-to get them firefighters, the ones who actually want to see the organization better, can we get together and respectfully, collectively go talk to the head chief in charge, you go, these are our concerns. This is what we would like to see change. Because I used to be that person that'd be like, it's all the fire chief's fault. He's not doing anything about it. But as I've grown and read books and interviewed people and talked to individuals off air, I've come to realize we are trying to put the blame on one man or one woman, which is not fair. Because in my opinion, company officers make or break companies. They're the ones that decide if they're going to be shit bags or if they're going to be go-getters. But if we can get the ones that want to see change together and, like I said, respectfully go up the chain and be like, this is what we would like to see, is that something that you would recommend organizations doing?
Well, yeah, I don't. Sure. What's it going to hurt? You have nowhere to go but up. What in the world is it going to hurt to bring your concerns? The problem is, are they listening to us? That's the piece right there that get people, because why do we want to go waste our breath when we don't think it's going to do a damn bit of good anyway? That's where a big disconnect happens when our relationships take a dive. Now, I've got a fire chief that I can walk in, I can pick up a phone, I can call anytime, and I can have a conversation and air out my concerns. He's not going to agree with every single thing I say. It's not like because I call him and say, hey, we need an electronic form of doing, command. I don't have an iPad, I don't have something in my hand, and we need this. Okay, well, he has to run through his stuff. So it. Yes, there are concerns that we could bring up, And I don't think there's any hurt in that. And we need to be able to have open, honest conversations. We need that communication piece. It's just if they don't listen, that's usually when where the guys give up because they're saying, why try? Now, with that being said, that's where I say, hold on a minute, because if they don't listen to you, I can't do anything about that. But if they don't listen to you, you can still make the changes with yourself and those that are around you, with that crew, with that station, with that shift. You could still do it. So when we wait these people out, because eventually they're going to retire, they're going to be gone. So it's not them I focus on, it's who's going to replace them that I start focusing on. If I can't do anything about the people above me, then I want to focus on their replacements and saying, this is how you take care of people. You know, this is how you sit down and you listen. And we got to have not only conversations, we need critical conversations. And sometimes that's going to hurt. We need feedback. We don't do everything right. We all make mistakes, but we don't like to be told when we make mistakes. We don't like to be told when we're doing something wrong. But somebody has to be the bearer of bad news if we're ever going to improve and get better. You should want to seek out that. That's a hard pill for organizations to swallow, and when they're not doing something right, to be told that. So a piece of it that I do is organizational problem solving, where I'll go into an organization, just exactly what you're talking about. They can't communicate with each other, and the boots on the ground are frustrated, and the administration's frustrated, and they're battling back and forth. And I go in, and this is the one thing I tell fire chiefs: if you want to know where the problems are in your organization, all you have to do is go ask your people. If you want to know what the solutions are to those problems, all you have to do is go ask your people. If you don't want to ask your people, bring me in. I'll come in and ask your people. And I tell the administration to leave the room and leave me with the boots on the ground. And I ask the guys, tell me where the problems are in your organization. And they do. And then I hand them a piece of paper and I say, now give me two solutions to every problem. And they do. And I take that and I sit down with the fire chief or the administration and I say, I just listened to your people. And here you've got six main problems, but here's 20 solutions to those six problems, so that I can try to create a bridge to take up that gap of disconnect to push the entire organization forward. But what I've got to get the guys to understand is that it takes every single person in that organization to move the organization. And that is the critical piece that we don't understand as firefighters. We think it's just the top that moves the organization because that's what we're trained to believe. And it's not the case. If you want to change, it ain't the one guy at the top. Now, you may have a guy sitting at the top that don't listen, that has his own agenda, that wants to do things, but you can still create change. You can still create that culture. You can still create, we're going to take care of each other. We're going to get out here and serve the public. We're going to do customer service. We're going to do everything the right way. And then we're going to work on the replacement to that guy. And we're going to hope the next guy gets it. Instead of keep reproducing the micromanagers and the narcissists up in these positions, sometimes we have to extinguish that stuff. And we're not. We're just reproducing it. So I do talk harshly when I go out to places, and because I need them to understand where the problem is, and the problem is us. So I'm like, if you don't like your administration and the way that they're doing it and the fact they don't listen, you created that monster when they were sitting out in the companies. Now they're at the top of the organization and you don't like it. No, so we got to stop allowing that stuff to happen and have the company officers grab a hold of their crews and say, no more. You're going to start doing this the right way. You're not, get rid of the ego. Here's a dose of humility. Take that. I don't care how good you think you are. It takes a complete package. We need to be more grateful and we need to focus on the things that we do have. At least we woke up with both arms and both legs. Not everybody can say that. And go out here and make real positive change. And that will absolutely, when you have a 50 people at the bottom and one guy at the top, when those 50 people want to activate, they can activate and they can move that organization. Whether they think they can or not, I guarantee you they can if they just did it in the right way. They might not get their way as far as going to the fire chief and asking for something, but then keep asking. What do you got to what do you what do you got to lose by going up and say, hey, let's do this? Oh, yeah, okay, let me find a way to regroup. There's so many things that I've been shot down on, slapped around, beat around, drug around the floor, things that happened, and all I do is find a better workaround to make it happen. Because I want to think outside the box and continue to make positive change in the right direction. Even if I get slapped down this way, okay, I'll just find another way to do it that I can get by with it. And then I just keep doing. That's what we got to do out here. We can never give up. Once we give up, they've won.
Okay. With that being said, I want to ask you a personal question. Because you mentioned earlier you never want to be like those type of administrations we're talking about. But you to any other firefighter listening, the way you talk, the way how everything you have stated are true facts, and I'm sure have resounded with lots of people listening. Why wouldn't you want to become fire chief of any organization where you become the head chief in charge to create that for an entire organization?
Well, first, I told you why I didn't want to be part of administration, because then all my brothers and sisters, and I think that's where the change happens, takes place, is with the boots on the ground. That's where the majority of the people in the organization reside, and that's where I want to be to create the most positive change. Now, I have had offers across the country to come and apply for fire chiefs, and it's very humbling. It's like, oh, and I don't think I'm to that level. I don't play politics very well. I don't think I would be, just because of the way I talk, I don't think it would go over real well with politicians and things. But it's not something that I'm going to, rule out for my life after I retire and I move on. That if I can have some way to help an organization, if I could go in and just show the people, this is how you do it. And if I could have a positive impact, then I certainly want to keep those doors open. But right now, it's just not a place that I want to be, because I feel that my strength is with the boots on the ground and going out here and still making the runs and running up and down the street, red lights and siren, and getting woke up in the middle of the night and making runs. I still love that part of the job. And I want that. I can't be tied down to a desk at this point in my career and making those things happen. And like I said, everything now today is a data-driven world. And I've told people, I've never been a fire chief. Hell, I've never been in the admin. And there's people out here that would sell their own mother to be the fire chief. That's the ones that we don't want to be fire chief. The ones that we want to be fire chief never asked to be the fire chief, right? Those are the ones that make the best ones, because they're, and it's just like, stop trying so freaking hard, and then you'll start understanding how things can happen when, I don't know. I won't rule it out, but I don't want to be fire chief right now. And it was something that when I was first on the job, I thought, oh, that'd be cool to be a fire chief someday and you can make all the changes. But then as I went on, it was like, man, they have a lot of struggles. They have a lot of battles. They have a lot of things. They have to keep the politicians happy. They have to keep the citizens happy. They have to keep the firefighters happy. They're just like totally in this whirlwind of shit that they have to do every single day. But it might be something that I do later on, before I hang it up all the way, that I might try my hand at it. But I've always kind of chuckled and said they'll probably kick me out within a month, because I won't kiss anybody's ass for my job. It's like what I have to now. Yeah, I'm merit, but even if I was to get demoted, I'm still the happiest person walking in every single day. I'm not trying to get demoted, don't get me wrong, but I still am grateful to be given the job and stuff. And that's the ones that go into headquarters and they're afraid of losing their jobs. That's the ones that create all the problems, because they can't stand up for the rest of us and say what needs to be said. That's the communication piece that we're all suffering. And they don't want to go out there and tell the truth, because they're afraid it may cost them their job. And I say, if it cost me my job, at least I went down swinging. At least I went down trying to do it right. And that's what I feel about my position today. If I lose it for, I hope I don't, but if I do, at least I know I gave it my best shot and I tried to do what was right and how I feel it should be done, and trying to progress the organization. So I don't know. It's fun to go through life, and the older you get, the wiser you get, the more maturity you get, and you get to start looking at things from a whole different perspective. And I'm getting to that age now that, part of me would like to go in and make changes in an administration to the guys on the ground, and part of me don't want to leave that aspect, so I'm kind of torn. But I don't know. Maybe we'll see. It may never be in my cards, and someday it might. I don't know
Okay.
at this point.
All right. I wanted to ask. Okay. What would be your advice for any females that are wanting to come in and do the job and get to whatever rank that they feel like they would love to be in? What's your advice to them on what they should do coming into an organization?
Well, I don't think it's any different for females as it is males. I mean, you got to come in, you got to work your butt off, you got to earn the respect of your peers. It may be different for females when you get into an organization that don't have a lot of females. You're going to be treated differently, like you're not worthy and stuff, but the adversity can make you stronger as long as you can resist the fact of trying to blame it on somebody else. I went through and I've been beat up in my career and stuff over being female, and I don't make any qualms about it. It's because I'm a straight female. Because when I came in the fire service, the majority of females were predominantly gay, and I felt like I was at a disadvantage because when I was on a department with other gay females, and any time I got approved to go to a class or that I got a position or something, it was because a guy said that. Because I was having sex with people in the administration, and they didn't say that about the gay women because there was no women in the administration. So then I was accused of my sex life and things like that. I'm like, are you kidding me? So there was a point in my career that I felt I would have been better off had I been gay, because then people wouldn't have said some of the things that they said about me. But it's all in the past now. I don't think it matters if you're gay, straight, black, white, man, woman, or trans. I think we got to a point where we need to start treating each other with respect. To answer your question, I would say you just got to stay strong. You got to understand if you're a female, you are walking into a male-dominated job. You cannot be so oblivious that you're not walking into a male-dominated job. It is. And with that is going to come certain risk to do. My dad was very old school, and he did not believe in women in fire service or women in any job that was male dominated. So I actually got calloused up by him in the beginning, more so than I could from any other fireman and things. And he was a male chauvinist. That's what he was. And he didn't care. His beliefs were his beliefs, but he was raised in an era that's the man dominated everything. And that was just the way he was raised up. But, and you will see certain people that just say, one of the problems with the fire service is the women. And I might come back to that as a damn split tails. They screw everything up, but it's just, you got to roll with it and you got to go on,
Right.
And I think now you're seeing that some of the better officers and chiefs that are coming out are actually female. And I'm not, I think it's because of the nurturing aspect, because there's difference in men and women when it comes to how they nurture with other people. Some males, they don't want to worry about the,
Right.
talking, just say what you're going to say and move the hell on, where females do have a different aspect to that. So now you're seeing the more interrelation, personal trust being built and things like that for more female officers than you are male officers. Across the board, it needs to be equal. Like I said, you got to come in, you got to grind it away. You might take some more licks than somebody else does, but you got to put it is what it is. And what are you going to do? There's plenty of avenues out there legally and stuff if you want to take that route. But it's like, I just don't like the ones that come in. It's just like oblivion to it's a male-dominated work environment. It'd be no different than, a black person walking into predominantly
Right.
white
Exactly.
thing.
Exactly.
You know you're coming in, you're different, but it's when people treat you differently, they don't realize that they are creating a hostile work environment. And that's the stuff that we have to get better at, just treating each other with respect. Like I said, I don't care. I don't care. Just as long as you can do the job when it comes time to do the job. And you'll have people that always try to take advantage of that. And that's men, women, black, white, gay, trans, doesn't matter. They take advantage of it. But we try to put everybody into a certain stereotype box, and that's not the case. There's women in where I work. My gosh, I wouldn't want to meet them down a dark alley. They'd beat the shit out of me. They're just as strong as any man on a fire scene. Yeah, when you naturally get older, women don't have as much upper body strength as a man. That's the way that the human body is different. It is what it is. But you got men that are 5 foot, 120 pounds out here that are firemen too. So give me a break, and they're sitting here doing it. It's like, that's where we come together. We do things as a team, not trying to wait, say, well, individuals got to be taken up. No, this is how we get together and we help each other. It's just like that high rise we had the other day. There's people that had to climb the stairs, and some of these guys are fit as can be. They're in the weight room all day long, but they're not used to climbing 14 flights of freaking stairs, and that in itself, they're all like dying by the time they get up, like, holy cow, because they got their gear, they got their air packs, they got, everything on, and this added weight, and then you're climbing, going up. So it's not just male and female. I mean, we've all got to look out for each other and just go and try to get better. And then you got to know, and hopefully, like in our department, we're very progressive, so we've got standards that we have to meet. To get hired, everybody has to pass a CPAT. To stay on the street, you got to pass what's called a WPE. Every year, you got to go through an obstacle course, which is like a version of the CPAT, to stay out on the street. And if at some point you can't pass that, then they will take you off the street, and you will be put into a workout regimen until you get that done. So you'll always have a variation in people. Some are stronger than others and stuff, but I think we need to, and I think it's gotten better today. We don't really put people in that stereotype box anymore, unless it's a department that don't have any females and they got their first one. And they're like, oh no, and we don't know what to do. And you know what? You come to work and you do the same thing you do every freaking day. You got a mother, you got a father. It's like, it's no different than that.
All right. My last question for you, I always like to ask the guests, and we kind of hit on it, but I like to ask the guests, all the guests that I have, this question anyways. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
Well, I'm where I want to be right now as a battalion chief. So I've made that pinnacle of where I want to go right now in the department that I'm on. So I feel like I've achieved that. But before I leave, I want to do everything to have the best and the most impact, positive impact that I can on the people that are around me. And when we talk about the size of Indianapolis, 1,300 strong, my battalion's only 60. And I have 15 officers. I don't know how many officers there's on IFD, probably 300 to 400 officers. I only got 15, but it's my 15. And my job is to make sure that they understand their job. And my job is to make those people better and to get them ready for the next position if they're going to go up. Don't wait and send them to admin and stuff. If they're missing something, it's my job to put them in remedial training and give it to them. And there's so many people out here that believe, like, well, my job's not training. I'm not in the training division. It's like, what do you think your job is? Your job is to be a coach and to be a mentor and to be a trainer and to be an advocate and to be, a supervisor and all these things in one package. And we've got to have more of that. So I just want to keep doing what I can do while I can do it, and in hopes that somewhere along the way, that I'm making an impact and making a difference for people to make the fire service just a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. I don't want to walk out the door and say, well, it doesn't matter. It's all the same. I feel like we need more people to step up and be the thought leaders and be the movers and the shakers and the changers, and let that grow and fester in itself. And then we're actually getting somewhere.
Love it. Okay.
Yeah.
And with that, Chief, I want to say thank you. Thank you, number one, for coming on. When I I first heard you when you were on the scrap with Chief Moore, and the way you talked when it came to leadership, I was like, damn. And I'm sure a lot of people were like, we need more chief officers with that mindset. We talked about it earlier. I'm not sure where the disconnect happened. I'm sure it happens a lot in organizations happening today. But for us firefighters, it's the fact that you know what the issues are. You're not afraid to speak on it because when you have an individual that's willing to speak on it, they shed the light, the spotlight becomes on them, the targets are on their back, and there are some people that just don't like it. In any business, if you're trying to do something positive, if you're trying to foster an environment for the good, you're always gonna have a hard time going against the naysayers. And I think that's due to complacency. I think when complacency makes a home in your organization, whether it's the fire service, police, EMS, retail, it doesn't matter. Anytime complacency finds a home in an organization, it's going to be a bastard to get rid of. But it's the fact that you're so vocal and that you just remember how you got to where you are. You've learned from the good and bad that you've seen. So I just want to say thank you for taking the time out of your day to come on and talk shop. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to answer the questions, and I hope that you got out of it what you were hoping to get out of this. And yeah, we just got to do that. And I found my voice now, but I don't go into work. I don't go on to podcasts or do anything to make people not want to like me. I want everybody to like me, but I've come to a realization that I'm not going to please everybody. As somebody said it recently, I'm not everybody's cup of tea. And I hate it because I want to. I want to gather all my brothers and sisters up, but there's such a disconnect out there with people and their emotional responses that now I'm kind of turning the page and saying, I'm hitting haters head on and the naysayers head on, and I don't care. They can whip on me all they want. If they're whipping on me, they're leaving somebody else alone. But I've gotten to a point in my life that I'm not driven by how many people like me, that you can't fight hate with hate. And so I'm trying to turn these naysayers around one at a time. And it's a very slow process, but I have to put up shields to that to say it doesn't matter whether you like me or don't like me. We have got to sit down and have a damn conversation. And where in the hell did that go? Where did it go being a good person? Quit
Right.
being a department asshole. That is a choice each one of us make every single day. We wake up and we walk in the doors. We're either going to be a good person or an asshole. But there's only one of those two that you can gain trust with another person, and that's being a good person. And when you're an asshole, you're tearing down that trust and stuff, and it's just so entirely sad. So again, we've got to take the audience away, from that 10%. We can't change the 10%, but we can sure help it along. Because they all still want to be part of something bigger than themselves, no matter where they're at. And we're just going to help them along into changing, because then they won't have an audience if they don't. And so then they'll conform very quickly. And I've seen it with my own eyes. So it's an amazing thing to happen when we all start coming together and getting people to realize where their shortcomings are or things like that. So I appreciate everything that you're doing. And the getting out there, the Student of the Game podcast, we need more of these things that we can learn from each other and make each other better as we go along. And hopefully we'll be able to meet in person one of these days.
Oh, no. Well, the reason why this happened, I will give her credit. Chief Ali, Chief Dean Ali, she's awesome. She's always been very good to me. Can't say enough about her. She's the one that made this connection happen. So thank you, Dina,
Oh, she is
for
awesome.
making this.
He's out there and making a world of difference in the mental health, and that's something else that's needed. And I'm not into the mental health side of things, but I think we do it to ourselves. I think most of the stuff we do to ourselves, suicide's on the rise because we just sit and we talk shit all day long, and who that's going to wear on anybody after a while. So I just decided to take a different road and not do that, not contribute to that anymore. I still make mistakes, and I paid for those mistakes, but that's all we can do is learn and just try to get better and catch ourselves when we start to stumble and get ourselves upright and back on track.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Danny. I really appreciate it and appreciate you.
Yes, ma'am, Chief. Thank you. Thank you for coming on.
Uh-huh.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.